Accessing library computer data.
The world doesn't always adhere to logic. And sometimes when you're lost, you're found.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the show. Finishing up season one of Discovery with Will You Take My Hand? Question mark. This is episode 15 of season one, aired on February 11th, 2018. Story credit goes to Akiva Goldsman, Gretchen J. Berg, and Aaron Harberts. Teleplay goes to Gretchen J. Berg and Aaron Harberts, who are the showrunners at this point, directed by Akiva Goldsman. In this episode, with Georgiou at the helm of the plan to end the Klingon War once and for all, the USS Discovery crew struggles to fathom and tolerate her hostile tactics. Plus, memories of past hardship are rekindled within Burnham. Season finale. This is it. We made it to the end of season one. Everyone, I canceled CBS All Access immediately after it aired. I watched the episode, got on board, canceled CBS All Access. So that is independent of the episode's quality, just more of a statement about CBS All Access. But Clay, how are you? We made it to the end. Did you ever think that we'd be here at this point?
My favorite episode of Miami Vice is Calderon's Return Part 1. And I'd like to talk about that today because I am so fucking done with this show. I don't think this finale deserves even talking about, frankly. Sure. I thought maybe they'd be able to pull it out, but the one thing I'll give this show is that it's actually, for as much as I've disliked it, it's actually strangely consistent. Like, I kept expecting them to do something different that was going to be like, all right, maybe they'll wrap it up. But they do the same thing they've been doing the entire season. They just, like, it's chucking everything out as quickly as possible just to serve the last, the entire season of this show could be erased. And because it's all just a build up to get to that last scene where she's getting the award and she's, you know, doing that shit. And like, but they don't earn any of it.
That said, we're going to take an audio break. And
guys, Saru is great.
That's the new catchphrase of this show. And yes, I will feed off of Clay's opening statement here right after we play an audio clip.
Is this how Starfleet wins the war? Genocide.
You want to do this here?
Fine.
Terms of atrocity are convenient after the fact. The Klingons are on the verge of wiping out the Federation.
Yes. But ask yourself, why did you put this mission in the hands of a Terran, and why the secrecy? It's because you know it's not who we are.
It very soon will be. We do not have the luxury of principles.
That is all we have, Admiral.
No, Clay, I appreciate your vigor of wanting to get into it. I haven't. Did you watch this recently, or did you watch it on Sunday night when it aired and you haven't seen it again since then?
I watched it Monday, and then I skimmed it again to just kind of refresh myself before we started.
Yeah, same. So, tying into your point, like, I think that the show is consistent to me in that it consistently underwhelms me with what I mm-hmm. think that they're actually going to do. Like, I sort of overestimate, like, oh, they must be building towards something here, or maybe this is going to be the way that it goes, and then the show will just be like, no, we'll take the easy way out, if you don't mind, and that'll be a good mm-hmm. way to go. And I think that Will You Take My Hand has been a consistent ending for the show. We didn't get our time travel aspect because the show is apparently just content to let things end where they end here. They don't
they
need to reset.
They actually arguably chose a hackier way out than if they had time traveled back to the beginning.
Yes. Yeah. You're talking about the very end, or you just talking about the overall?
The overall. The way that they decided to end the war is arguably worse than if they had just decided to go back to the beginning and restart everything.
Yeah. And I don't know if we're probably not going to do a season wrap up. I think we're going to do a sort of debate thing, which might be a better sort of tied in season wrap up with Trexpertise when that comes around. So I'll try to stick to this episode, although I do the more I after I'd watched it, the only thing I was really thinking about was the season as a whole, as opposed mm-hmm. to this episode. Mm-hmm. And it's tough. I just one of the things I was reading. One of the negative reviews, the reviews for this have actually been surprisingly positive. Matt Zoller Seitz, I think you pronounce his name, or Seitz, wrote for Vulture. And he was just praising the show. It was kind of remarkable. I retweeted it if you want to look at that, but it's on Vulture if you look at his finale review. And one of the more negative reviews, I think, had a good way to start talking about it, where they were saying that Discovery is pretty much one of the worst aspects of what serialized television does. And a lot of the Netflix shows fall into this struggle as well, where as opposed to Breaking Bad, which Breaking Bad maybe did serialization in the best way possible, which is they would intentionally write themselves into corners. They'd intentionally write themselves without knowing the way out and then have to organically come up with a way to get out of it.
Right.
Netflix shows, like the superhero shows and Discovery, have this opposite thing where they know the start and the end points and they have to write to those points.
Right.
So
right.
What it does is it screws up your pacing, because invariably you get to the middle bunch of episodes where you've run out of stuff to talk about before you can get to your next plot point to get you to the end. Mm-hmm. So you hit these dead periods, and it also makes it so obvious that you had to write this to get to the next section, as opposed to Breaking Bad, which everything on Breaking Bad feels very organic because the writers are in that moment deciding what would rationally make sense for these characters to do to get to the next point, as opposed to knowing what they have to do.
Right.
And Discovery really just felt like that to me. It felt like the show, and Will You Take My Hand, felt like the show, knowing where it had to go, where it had to go was stupid because they had fucked up the Brian Fuller thing in the anthology series. They knew that they kind of had to just reset everything at the very end. So the whole season is largely treading water, waiting to get to this end point, which wraps everything up so badly. And on a pacing level, I was shocked that it took half of the finale to get to whatever they were trying to do for. Like,
I was shocked
by how long it took for them to get down to Kronos. And there are 19 minutes left. I look, because I paused it. I couldn't believe how long it took. There were 19 minutes left in the episode to wrap up the war, which they did fairly shittily. But
yeah.
I don't know if you want to take it from there. I'm trying to sort of collecting my thoughts still. There's a lot to talk about. I want to talk about Kronos. I want to talk about the Klingons. I want to talk about Sarek. I want to talk about all of it.
Well, to kind of expand on what you're saying, it's it's just in line with what we've been saying the whole time. With it's just note cards on a board. And this episode, if you look at like the high beats in this episode, in a vacuum, they're not bad. They make sense. Like, the two big scenes with Burnham make sense from a larger character standpoint. Those scenes being the one where she stands up to the Admiral, and then at the end where she has the
farewell.
I was going to say the speech in the awards ceremony.
Yeah.
And clearly her arc, I guess, has been to go from someone who, she says it literally in the show. I can't. It's she chose.
It's the mutiny line, right? It's, she started off as someone who was willing to compromise the ideals of the Federation and became someone who was not willing to do that, even if it meant destruction.
Right, and honestly, that's great. I mean, if that had been a consistent character arc, that would be fantastic. I don't feel like they earned any of that leading up to this. And even within this episode, it's just kind of like, I don't feel like they earn any of it. They're just filling time in between hitting those beats.
Yeah.
And
I think that a lot of people that praise the show are saying that that kind of stuff was prominent through the entire series. I don't think it was. Outside of Burnham basically telling you that at the very start of the show,
yeah,
the show was not interested in exploring what that meant. Even on the trip to the mirror universe, she never had to embrace doing something badly or against the Federation values. The entire time they were in the mirror universe, they stood up against it.
Don't you remember how she talks about how off screen it's become really difficult to remember who she is?
Right. Yes. And then immediately walks in and does the Federation values in the episode.
Yeah. Yeah. They don't stick to the character arc at all, except when it's convenient to move the plot forward. And it's really frustrating because it could have been a nice character arc. And
yeah,
you know, I think this stuff, like I've been saying previously, it looks great on paper, But when you actually have to connect those that tissue, like you were saying, you end up with these dead spots because they've plotted them out in such a way that if you can't get there organically, then it just feels like you're running in place.
Yeah.
Until you do. And then they just kind of be like, all right, this is the point in the story. We have to do this. So we have to do this. And it just, I don't know. It just, I don't think it's not a great, for, you know, I've always been on the fence about our friend Sean is a big proponent of shows that write the entire thing out before they even start shooting, which I don't know if he realizes how rare that actually is.
Right. What is it? Farscape or Babylon 5 is the example.
Babylon 5. Yeah. And you know, the things to look at as a reason why you would prefer that is stuff like Lost or stuff where they keep throwing these mysteries at you, but then they get sidetracked and they, you know, it doesn't really track and it kind of doesn't come together and it feels like that's what serialized television has turned into, is a lot of like, you know, as I was saying about this show, bad improv kind of.
Yeah.
So on the surface, it would seem like, yeah, it would make more sense if they had the whole thing plotted out. But I think Breaking Bad is a great example of that, where not having it plotted out does force you to be more creative and does force you to make decisions that maybe you wouldn't have made if you stuck to the script.
Yeah.
Or stuck to the plot. And this show is a good argument against having everything plotted out, because I assume that they did what we've been saying they're doing, which is they had their high points on a board, and then this is the point in the series where we had to hit them, and it's just they didn't have enough meat to get there.
Yeah,
you know, like, take this away from me. I'm gonna ramble. So I would just take.
Well, I mean, the I guess we can start by talking about Burnham. Her character and throughout this entire thing, because Burnham's in a weird spot here. It was seen as, like, when the series started, we were kind of like, oh, a non-captain lead character in the mm-hmm. show. They then introduce a Klingon war aspect that I didn't really realize this until it started going, but Burnham being who she is and the rank she is was completely made pointless by the grandiosity of the war. In a, like, you can't have a character who can't have any impact, because the only people having impact are captains and admirals in this mm-hmm. event. Having her be subordinate to them gives her no agency through this entire story. Like, there's no ability for her to really seize the moment and do anything outside of the failed Ash Tyler Vok romance thing. It's too big of a story. If she was somehow isolated from the ship and had to survive on Kronos or something, it gave her an ability to examine what was going on. She is just a passive viewer of everything that's going on in this season. And she's not involved in anything. She's just kind of there watching it all go. You don't really get a sense of what she thinks about it. You don't get a sense of how she's giving up on her beliefs to get to this point. Only thing that's ever done that, and you know that she says it at the very last moment, she says it in the final episode, mm-hmm. and you're like, this isn't really what the series has been about to this point, but sure, maybe that's what you were going for. It really coalesced in my mind how impotent Burnham was through this entire 15 episodes.
Yeah. I mean, if they had, you know, I hate to go back and try to like rewrite everything, but like, there's so much stuff that they to knock around. But like, if they had followed through on the promise of, or not the promise, but the suggestion of Lorca being a do whatever it takes captain, and the reason that he brings her onto the ship is because she seems like someone who will do that, and then him basically using her to mete out the non-Starfleet black opsy kind of stuff that he seemed like he wanted to do. Forcing Burnham to kind of reassess where she is currently and where she came from and what she wants to be and what her own values are and stuff like that. Then that stuff happens, you know, it would feel, you know, she would have agency over what she's doing. She's making decisions about stuff. But I feel like all she does in this show is, she's there while stuff happens. And then she, like, her only motivation, but her only use in this story seems to be to be like the conscience for the people who are actually doing stuff.
Sure. Yeah, right.
You know, like the anytime I think of Burnham, all I think of is her giving one of those like really impassioned pleas to do something, and then the other person going like, yeah, okay.
Right. Basically the Admiral scene where she's talking to the Admiral and they all stand up and say, "We are Starfleet," and they don't wanna do whatever they're doing.
Yeah, or like later on where she confronts George Au and she's like, "Come on, give me that thing." She's like, "No. Come on, give me that thing. No. Come on, give me that thing." Okay.
Let's
like what? Sorry.
we should talk a little bit, I guess, about the episode here and how it all comes together. So they basically, George Au is revealed. It becomes obviously becomes super obvious how clumsy everything was here, where George Au is in command of the ship and sort of yelling at people, and still nobody on the crew seems to realize that this could be a mirror universe.
Yeah. So going on, you know, I said last week, how is it that nobody on this ship who just came from the mirror universe maybe puts the pieces together that this is mirror George Au? Half the people on the bridge were on George Au's goddamn ship.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
They should know her. They should realize that this is not her very quickly. And like, who is Burnham like playing towards when she's like, "Oh, by the way, Captain, where are you from?"
Yeah.
Like, who is she playing to that? Because everybody who's on the ship there knows the relationship between Burnham and George Au. They know that they've known each other for a long. Like, there's no, I don't understand. Who this masquerade is being played towards? Except maybe the robot. No, the robot lady was on the other ship.
Or why maintain it at that point? Why doesn't Burnham just tell the crew this? You know, Starfleet command fucked up.
Right. Yeah. Especially since you have this big scene later where the whole crew stands up to the Admiral. And all of that is based entirely on Burnham's speech. Whereas if they were aware of what was happening and therefore acting on orders that maybe they don't agree with, that would give that scene later a little bit more oomph instead of just, you know, it played the way it played because that's the way it needed to play. But they could have made it have a little more weight to it if they had, you know, thought it through a little bit more.
All right. So I guess that, you know, that sort of gives us a good opening into the George Au character here, who we can talk about a little bit. No, going from, we've talked about previously how Mirror Universe, George Au has the scripts very confused about whether or not this is the same person, whether or not you should feel anything for them. This episode resolves itself by saying, no, you shouldn't feel bad for her because she's not the same character. And then she just kind of runs off into the background. Yeah. You never see her again.
There's some real Tom Riker shit going on in this episode.
Yeah. And, so I guess we'll talk about George Au's sort of plan and plot and what she was expecting to do this entire time.
First of all, how does she know how to fly the ship?
Which ship? Sorry, the
Discovery.
Discovery.
She's sitting in the captain's chair, like giving out orders and using the correct terminology and everything, like it's something that she's been doing as though she's a captain.
Oh, but sure.
She shouldn't know how any of that shit works. I'm sorry. That's a little bit of a nerd nitpick for me. But.
She's Captain Emperor. That's what they call her.
Yeah,
she is. I mean, we don't really understand the point of why Starfleet did this. Like, they want her expertise, but they put her in a position of power. That doesn't make any sense. And apparently the Discovery crewmen have to act like she's actually a captain at this point. They can't just go against her. And she gets to Kronos. They go down and, you know, they're trying to get information about the shrine or whatever. They're going to do something with the shrine. They're going to stop Kronos. And she reveals that she has a bomb and she's going to drop it into a well, and that's going to blow up the planet. And then Burnham sort of talks her out of this whole thing. And it's just, I don't know. Like the resolution here for the war thing felt so awful.
It's so bad. It's so bad.
It's so awful. Do you want to just go with what you were thinking before while I collect my thoughts here?
Well, first of all, so the last episode, they build up the fact that they need George Au because Starfleet needs to give George Au all this stuff because she has other information that's going to allow them to win the war somehow, right? What is that information? Because the only thing she does in this episode, like her big plan, is to beat the shit out of Laurel, and when that doesn't work, they just go to Tyler anyway.
Yeah.
So what is the grand information that she has? She knows where to plant the bomb, but they don't even know that. She doesn't even know that.
Yeah.
Like, they still need... Tyler gives them the... Why do they need to know any of this shit when they've got Tyler there who knows it all?
Yeah, right.
Like, their whole thing is, oh, we don't know the layout of the planet. Nobody's been there for 100 years. What are your crew guys is half Klingon now? And he's looking to redeem himself.
Yes, and to redeem himself he does. I mean, I think that that ties into the whole, I thought Kronos was a disaster in this.
I liked the gambling scene because I am a fan of Games of Chance and Star Trek. I think they're always fun.
Yeah, sure.
And Zach Handlin in his review also mentioned this, but it was the only time this season where it seemed like we were actually seeing Klingons, because they were acting very Klingon-y when they were playing that game, and I enjoyed that.
Except I believe Tyler in Klingonese says that he owned somebody, which is just a little bit too modern for my sensibilities. I think about that. They are acting Klingon-y. I was confused about why on Kronos, after we've learned, you know, through the season that the Klingons are a very ethnocentric race.
Why there's no Klingons on Kronos?
Why it looks like Kronos is the mall, basically, yeah, where everyone comes together and all the non-Klingons hang out there. What was that? Why were there no Klingons? And why were the Klingons that were there so indifferent to humans being around?
Yeah, that's what we call a budgetary constraint.
Okay.
Because when your Klingon makeup requires like 17 hours of makeup for everybody, you're only going to have like two of them on screen at a time. So you have to populate the background with something else. They've got plenty of green paint to go around.
Yeah, with Orions. And it's a whole bunch of Orion Raiders. And that whole scene and sequence to me felt ripped out of Game of Thrones or something, right down to the fact that...
Or literally anything.
Yeah, Jor-El has to sleep with these Orions, and then she gets the information from them.
That was very Game of Thrones-y, yeah.
And you know, we get our Clint Howard cameo, because that's a callback to TOS and everything like that, so that's got to happen, but...
Thankfully, that's the only callback to TOS in this episode, so we don't have to worry about any more, like, pandering or anything
Yeah,
like
absolutely,
that.
Unless they did something in the last 5 minutes, but I turned off the TV at that point. I wasn't interested in watching it.
Yeah.
That sequence just, it felt like... The tone of this one felt weird to me too. There's a lot of sort of attempts at comedy in this episode for a episode that's about ending the war and being, you know, a race against time to save humanity from the impending destruction of Earth. There's a lot of Tilly one-liners in this one that I thought we had moved away from. She gets high and passes out for a while.
I didn't feel any urgency at all to what they were doing.
No.
Like, you've got scenes where Tilly's getting high, Georgiou's getting laid, Burnham and Ash are like having a relationship talk in a tattoo parlor. Like, at no point are they like, hey, let's move this shit along. We actually, you know, these guys, they have the Klingon zeroing in on Earth, who apparently has no defenses whatsoever.
No.
You know, it's not like they have no ships left at Earth for some reason to defend from the incoming Klingon army, I guess. So, you know, they're presenting this implied timetable, but it's just like, yeah, let's stick around on the surface of Kronos and just, you know, hang out for a bit and try and find, let's figure out what's going on. Let's play some games and get high for a bit.
According to Memory Alpha, this is the first scene that features urination on screen in Star Trek. So there's something historic that we just watched play. I want you to be aware of that. Yeah, I mean, and it ties into the, you know, the whole Klingon ending the war thing. The resolution here just made it so painfully obvious how Laurel was just being held in the brig for the last 8 episodes to get to this point where she is now the Klingon leader for some reason. Like, she and what are they saying here? That because she has the ability to blow up Kronos, she's the leader of the Klingons now?
Yeah, which doesn't make any sense to me because you've got the detonator for the bomb linked to her biosignature, which means like only she can set it off, right?
Yeah.
Fucking kill her.
Right. It's the opposite problem we had with the vengeance factor with Riker when he shoots that woman with the phaser and kills her at the end. It's the exact opposite resolution that you need.
If I was literally any Klingon in that room, I would go, oh, that's great. And then I would kill her.
Maybe it's the the reverse, the dead man's thing, like Terminator 2. As soon as she's done, she has to hold the button constantly for it not to blow up or something.
No,
like
I don't know. I was thinking that, but then when she was holding up that screen, there was a big button that said activate on it. So it means that you have to actually activate the bomb. So they should have just kept, like, what if even so, if I was a client, I wouldn't fucking believe her. I would have killed her.
Yeah.
Like, we went through this in the first episode, where there was a lot of stuff that these Klingons were doing that in any other series, those Klingons would be killed for it.
What was the point of this Klingon debacle, basically? Like, where the Klingons have ended up now at a point where the houses are united, I suppose, under mm-hmm. duress, I guess, is what we're supposed to understand. So this is going to move them into the Klingons that we know. From the future series, the houses are in order. Laurel is somehow a leader, although she's not the emperor, because I think they've already said that you can't have a female emperor of the Klingon Empire.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, like, and just even Laurel assuming this mantle doesn't make a lot of sense to me. That's not the character that she was portrayed as this entire time. Like, is that supposed to be her arc, that she comes to realize at the last minute that she's not best served by sitting in the brig this entire time and should be the leader of her people? Felt so sloppy.
She's got, I mean, there's nothing about her character up to this point that has portrayed her as, like, conflicted about the war or anything.
Right.
Like, you know, yep. She was in love with Voke, but I mean, aside from that, not really. You know, it's, the only thing I was thinking during that scene, after I was thinking, why don't they just kill her, is, you know, if you're looking for a character to peacefully bring an end to the Klingon-human war through diplomacy, it's a real shame that they didn't have a character to put in that position who had some sort of, like, personal insight on what it is to be human and Klingon at the same
yeah.
time. Like, if only they had a character who needed some sort of closure to who they are as a person and could end the war diplomatically by being the embodiment of both of these races working together. If only they had that character to use in that situation, but they didn't. So they had to use Laurel because she was also there.
And, I mean, you're joking, but is that a satisfying ending for Ashvok to leave like that? Was that legitimately the most surprising thing that happened in this season, in my opinion. Like, I was legitimately shocked that's what happened to him at the very end.
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming he's going to be back in the next season.
Yeah.
Because just as I assume the second season is going to end with the Enterprise going, thanks, guys, and then leaving.
Yep.
Because anything interesting only happens off screen.
Well, I mean, yeah, and we'll get to that. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, oh, I don't really, I'm sorry if I'm disjointed, but I feel like I want to talk more about the broad aspects of the episode than the actual episode. I thought that the episode was generically fine. It was in line with everything else that Discovery's done to this point. So I guess we're going to have that sort of wrap-up debate. We'll cover the bigger themes. I think that this episode on its face value is just kind of a getting to the end. I'm shocked by the pacing of it. I'm shocked by how quickly it all sort of came together. I'm shocked by how out of nowhere a lot of the resolutions came up to be. I'm shocked that they actually didn't reset things, because this is where we now end up, is almost a tougher time to explain how this is canon at some point, which I'm not overly concerned about, but it is weird that they keep writing themselves more specifically like this. So we'll get to the end here. The Enterprise appears, right? We get our little sequence of NCC-17. Uh-oh, we don't know who that is. Who could it possibly be? It's Pike's Enterprise. So the Enterprise swoops into screen, and we cut to black.
This was like when you go to the doctor and you get, like, a bunch of shots, and then they give you a lollipop at the end.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, you know what? I love lollipops. That's exactly what this was, where it's like, it was a season of fucking garbage. Trying to, you know, make things new and you know, all this kind of other crap, and it failed miserably as far as I'm concerned. And then at the in the last second, they're like, well, you know what? We'll give them the Enterprise. And then like that'll release enough dopamine that people will go on Twitter and be like, this was the greatest episode of Star Trek I've ever seen in my life. Look at the ship. The ship looks so good. Oh, my God. The music is so great.
The music is great. But I mean, outside of I understand what you're my question I sort of broached on Twitter. And I don't know if Twitter allowed me to be as clear as I wanted to be, is that.
There was a misunderstanding on Twitter?
No. Well, yeah, right.
I've heard of no such thing.
I think that my question about that is, outside of that being the only option that's possible because we're 10 years in front of TOS's time period from the setup, who are the people watching Discovery at this point that get most excited by the original series, the original Enterprise? See, would you disagree? I think that of all the people watching Star Trek now, the largest group of them would consider TNG to be the prime Star Trek show. Would you disagree with that?
No, probably not. I think they might have been trading a little bit more on the people maybe who came to the show because of the movies, the new movies, too.
Yeah,
you know, the younger people who just got into Star Trek through the JJ movies, that might work for them a little bit more than it would for the older people. But I mean, I think it probably worked for the older people too. It's tough to see any version of the Enterprise and not get a little bit of a buzz from it.
Yeah.
It felt really hokey for me. Like, it felt like a total, pay no attention to the crap on your shoes kind of moment. But for me, anyway. But
and I think you're right that they're trying to tie it into the Kelvin universe. I think I saw a quote from one of the producers saying that what they're trying to do is make the difference between the TV show and the new films be seamless. So they're trying to make it feel like that.
Uh huh.
And I think that makes sense as to why they would bring the Enterprise back at that point. I guess I'm still interpreting it as the show being different from the movies, which I guess is not the case at this point. So I should just abandon that. So the show is the movies.
Someone sent us this video that I watched where someone was saying that the reason that Discovery is so different is because of rights. Because like the movie rights are held by Bad Robot, but the show rights are held by Paramount or something, so Discovery needs to actually be like its own thing.
Yeah.
And it was, I don't remember the entire thing, but it was kind of interesting where it was like, oh, that might explain why they needed to kind of reboot everything, even though they're keeping it in the prime timeline, because trademarks and images don't belong to CBS.
Yep.
From the other stuff and that kind of thing, which I guess makes sense, but it's such a big clusterfuck overall. I don't know. I think I don't mind trying to bridge the gap like that as long as they don't do it literally. Like they don't have the opportunity to do the stuff that Deep Space Nine did, where they literally go back to the 60s version of the show and maintain the continuity like that.
Right.
So I think as long as you stay outside the ship, I don't think there's really that big of a problem.
Yeah, I mean, that's... Listener, Kyle was kind of bringing this up to us. Do you think there's... I think there's a sizable chance that we do not see anything of the Enterprise.
I don't expect to.
Okay, so you think that they're not going to have the weird mashup problem of we see the bridge of the Enterprise and go, why does it look like that? Because I was thinking that, you know, I don't care about the aesthetics of the show. I didn't care that the technology is earlier, but it looks like this. I will have a problem if they sort of show us the Enterprise that we already know and it doesn't look anything like the Enterprise. So that was my concern about it. And if they don't show the Enterprise, that lessens the impact of this final scene. You know what I mean? If it's just them talking over view screen going like, hey, we saw some aliens over here, you guys should go check it out, and then the Discovery goes off and we follow them on their adventure, that'll be what a pointless reveal of the Enterprise at the end of this episode that would be.
Yeah, and I honestly I kind of expect them to do that.
Okay.
Interesting. I mean, I don't know, because yeah, I guess it all depends on. I mean, the minute you go inside the Enterprise, that means you have to, yeah, you're going to have to recast characters. I mean, they already did with Sarek, but you're going to have to recast characters. You're going to have to adjust the look of everything, and it probably will end up looking more like, I mean, even the Kelvin stuff doesn't match this show.
Right.
You know, like the Kelvin stuff matches the original series more than it matches this show.
Yeah.
As far as like costuming and stuff goes. So I would be, I don't know. I mean, let's say they do. How would you feel about it if they did decide, you know what, fuck it, we're just going to go for it. And they go inside the Enterprise and you've got a newly designed interior, newly designed costumes. You get somebody playing Pike who's not the guy from the movie. You get people playing Spock and all these other characters who are not from the movies or the shows. Like, how would you feel about that?
If they, so I guess there's some up for debate about whether we'll see Spock in this, right? And would it be Zachary Quinto who plays him?
Right.
And would it be, you know, it's Pike is played by Bruce Greenwood, I think. Is that actor's name in the movies?
Yeah.
That will, see, but I was under the impression that Discovery is not in the Kelvin universe at this point. So that, I think I'd be more disappointed, although I'd be resigned to what it is if they just firmly entrenched us in the Kelvin universe at this point.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I'd feel a little bit of a relief that on that artificial sort of bullshit level, this is not my Trek universe. You know what I mean? Like, this is the other Kelvin universe. They can do whatever they want over here. Who cares? I don't know. It would be weird. I would. And John Hamm was a very popular suggestion for who would play Pike in this if it was recast, because he does look a bit like the original actor from TOS.
Interesting. John Hamm in anything is always more or less the right choice.
Yeah. What do you think? You asked me about it, but what would you care if we saw the Enterprise? Would you care if we went inside when we met Pike and all that stuff?
I think it would all depend on what they do with it. Like, if they did it just for the sake of doing it, then I would not be a fan. But I mean, if they could get, you know, if you come into, you know, it bothers me because all of the other shows waited way longer to do this.
Yeah.
I mean, even Enterprise, from what I know, waited a lot longer to do this than this show did. And I can't, like, it's tough for me to see them do that and not feel like they're just, you know, hitting the nuclear button just to make sure they get people to come back.
Yeah.
But that being said, if they manage to, you know, season two starts, in a sign of good faith, we're going to give you the Enterprise and we're going to give you all this stuff, and they actually manage to use it to bolster the series and create a good story out of it, then yeah, do whatever you want. But it's just, if they do it just for the sake of being like, wow, I can't believe Captain Pike came to see us on the Discovery. Wasn't that great? Everybody, like, that stuff is like, why? I would much rather they try to stake their own claim or stake their own, you know, presence as a show, as opposed to trading on Star Trek, the original.
Yeah. I think I'd agree.
That being said, if I had to choose, if they were going to do it, I don't think I would like it to be Bruce Greenwood.
Okay.
Or Zachary Quinto.
Okay.
I guess, I don't know. I guess that's a toss-up. Because, I mean, I think as soon as you do that, no matter what you say, you automatically put yourself in the Kelvin timeline, right?
Yes, I think.
Although,
so,
I don't know. On Highlander, they brought Christopher Lambert in for the first episode, even though technically those things don't jive. Nobody seemed to care. But that was a long time ago before people really cared about this shit. So,
yeah. I don't know. Well, I guess we'll have to wait until that actually shakes itself out in the second season. I'm just trying to think.
I would also like, we kind of went past it, but the scene where Burnham talks George Au into giving her the bomb.
Yep.
Might be one of the worst scenes I've ever seen in a television show.
Yeah, sure.
Like, even there's a really horribly delivered line from Michelle Yeoh where she says something and Burnham was like, well, that's not true at all. And then Michelle Yeoh goes, it was worth a try. Like, and she, like, and her delivery of it is so, I mean, maybe I could, you can just chalk it up to the language barrier or something, but it's very strange and it doesn't feel like a line. It's a very cavalier kind of line. And then the whole thing where she's like, I don't know. Why couldn't that have been Lorca? Why can't that character be Lorca? That scene works 100,000 times better if it's a character we fucking care about.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and why is
even under false pretense of thinking that we knew him or something?
Yeah,
you know?
there is a relationship between Lorca and Burnham. You know, obviously, yeah, he's obviously, they did the mirror thing. Let's just assume for a second that they didn't turn him into a mustache twirling villain from the mirror universe.
Yeah.
But he is still from the mirror. You know, you can kind of more or less keep the same things, right?
Yep.
Or like they could have, I don't know, somehow saved him. And the secret is that he becomes the captain. I don't care. Anyway, he's the captain of the ship. You get to that scene at the end. At least you have character relationships that you've been building for 15 episodes, or at least claiming to build for 15 episodes.
Yep.
That you can play off of in that final moment instead of two people from completely different universes who have spent a total of like 15 minutes together or in their universe time angling on, you know, making decisions based off of how they felt about people in other universes who are not these people. And it's like, why does it have to be so complicated? Why can't it? And I don't know. It just really frustrates me. Like, I can understand the appeal of using Zhao Zhao in this scene, but it's just like using Zhao Zhao to represent the side of Burnham that she needs to reject.
Yep.
Doesn't feel genuine to me, because Zhao Zhao represented the side of Burnham that she is now embracing.
Right.
Like the Zhao Zhao she knows.
Yep.
So I feel it's disingenuous to use her in this scene. I don't know. That's just my, I think it would have worked a lot better if it was Lorca.
Yeah, I think I agree with you, because Burnham shouldn't be drawing any sort of, Burnham is betraying the memory of Zhao Zhao by coming to this conclusion by looking at Mirror Universe Zhao Zhao.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, you're not building anything off of that characterization, because this is not that person. So you've sort of flipped it around, and you're still insisting that you are doing that, which is, I think, you know, that's what the show does a lot. It's just insisting that this is what you're seeing, even though it doesn't make a lot of sense that that's what we're seeing.
Yeah.
And Lorca, at least, if you had built this up where Lorca was a Mirror Universe person, but Lorca's tactics had been influential in the Klingon War, and we actually saw this. Like, we saw that Lorca doing what he needed to do wasn't being overtly evil, but was being willing to go to extremes that other captains weren't willing to go to in a time of war. You reveal that he's a Mirror Universe person. At least at that point, as an audience member, we see that there is a conundrum for Burnham at this point. Like, what they've done is they pulled the rug out from under the feet of that argument, because the Mirror Universe is not a realistic ethical comparison at this point. Because the Mirror Universe is so bad that the Emperor's argument doesn't hold any water. So, of course, it's Burnham is the obvious answer. And that's the lazy out of Star Trek. You know, Star Trek, if you're going to say that Star Trek's always about hope and everything like that, yeah, in a very obvious situation, when your situation is kill a billion people or don't do it, yeah, sure, Star Trek took the right ethical decision here. It's better if the path is bad, but doing the slightly better thing is the better way to go about doing it, even if it's the harder path. That's a better narrative story to tell than this.
Yeah,
and I think that they really screwed that up.
Yeah, like, you know, I was just thinking about how you could have done it, and you'd have to find another way for them to get back from the Mirror Universe that didn't involve blowing up the entire Emperor's ship. But
I wouldn't even go to the Mirror Universe in this rewrite.
Well, I was going to say, so let's say they go to the Mirror Universe. Things play out more or less the way they do in the show as it is. Except they have a different way that they're getting back. Like, let's say they decide to grow the extra spores instead.
I can't believe the spore drive is still a thing in this. Keep going. Go ahead. Sorry.
So you get to the end point and say Discovery's coming in and they're gonna burn them out of there, right? And Georgiou is like, has some fondness for her because of whatever. And then so she's trying to hold off Lorca as Burnham's about to get beamed out of there. But as that point is coming up, Lorca is about to kill Georgiou. He's got her on the ground. He's got the sword up. He's going to stab her through the chest. And so then Burnham, instead of grabbing Georgiou, tackles Lorca and takes Lorca back to the Discovery. So that way, they both end up back in the Prime Universe. He's still Mirror Universe Lorca. She has saved Georgiou's life in this universe.
Yeah.
And also, Lorca and Starfleet then have to deal with the consequences of Lorca's actions. Then, at the end, when you reveal him as the captain of the ship, it seems like a much more insidious choice by Starfleet, because they know exactly who this guy is and what he's done, and they are choosing to ignore the things that he's, I guess they're choosing to ignore the stuff that happened in a different universe. and it almost even makes more sense, because it's like, well, I mean, when he was in our universe, he was nothing but a great captain.
Right.
You know, he got the job done. And so, that way, the stuff that happens actually matters.
Yes. Yeah. And no, I don't want to distract from your point. I'm going to come back from it. But it is funny that no one ever mentioned how oddly Lorca changed recently. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. was Lorca always a great wartime captain? Because no one seems to be Jesus. This guy didn't know anything about war, but all of a sudden, a couple months ago, he was just dominating everything. I'd be willing to ignore that if we go with your change, because I think that works, because Burnham gets the psychological relief of saving a version of Georgiou.
Yes.
At some point.
Yes.
And then Lorca coming back makes sense to re-implement him. You can give Jason Isaacs probably one of the better actors on the show so far as Jason Isaacs. You can give him a speech where he, monologues about what Starfleet has to do to give him power, and it would be more effective than Michelle Yeoh's sort of overly campy version of selling that as the Emperor. And then, as you say, Starfleet choosing to go back with this captain, even though they know everything about him, shows them at the most desperate, even though we got a horrible sense of how desperate Starfleet is at this point, because we didn't see anything of the war, but I do think that ties in better. So yeah, I'd agree with all of that, I think.
Yeah, and just following up on how bullshit the ending of the war is, it's just like, they have that one, Laurel gives that one speech, and then they cut to all the ships, like, 20 feet from Earth.
Yeah, they take a hard right.
Yeah, taking a hard right to go back to Kronos. And then it's just monologue. And that was it. The war was over.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
The war. It was only about five Klingon ships, too, which was the sad thing.
Yeah. Like, what are we even doing here? Like, why? I don't know. I don't know, man. Maybe I'm being too hard on the show. Maybe Trexpertise can talk me down. But it's just like, the thing that bothers me more with this stuff is not that it's bad. It's that the potential was there. And they just whiffed.
Yeah, they whiffed. Yeah.
And it's not like,
I'd almost argue this story is exactly what I would have expected from a modern TV sensibility of Star Trek. You know what I mean? Like, where they actually ended up at, I would have been like, yeah. You know, if we made predictions about this, this almost would have been, this makes total sense with how they would combine a Star Trek with a modern sensibility. This probably is the kind of storyline. They really didn't hit any aspect of telling that story along the way, which is the shocking part. It's all very, and maybe that's the biggest letdown of all, is that it was all very kind of predictable.
Incoming transmission.
From whom?
I'm having trouble identifying it, but it's a priority one distress call.
Identify the source, please.
I'm getting a Federation ID code. It's choppy. Trying to clean it up, sir.
Helm, slow us down.
Dropping a set of warp now, sir.
This is Captain Saru of the Federation Starship Discovery. Please identify yourselves.
Hails from Captain Pike, sir.
It's the USS Enterprise.
Yeah, I mean, they set up at the beginning, they set up this interesting concept, whether it's the Burnham character herself or just the idea of this war between the Klingons and the humans, where you've got the Klingons as, you know, basically like white nationalists or at least race purists.
I liked that storyline. Everyone's kind of shitting on the Klingon storyline. I like the Klingon aspect of this.
I think it would, you know, when the core tenet of your concept is people of every race and background working together for the betterment of the universe, yeah, it makes sense that you would put them up against a bad guy who's like isolationist and only believes in racial purity and all that kind of stuff. I don't think there's I would find that interesting. And especially,
and I think it's a very Klingon, that feels very Klingon to me.
Yeah. I mean, if you put them into a situation where they're at war with each other, then both sides have to start making difficult decisions that might be antithetical to what their belief system is.
Sure.
Which is what they try to do in this. Like, they try to rush that shit in this last episode here. That's much more interesting to me as a storyline than anything they did in this season.
Yeah, and it gives Ashvok a chance to... You make the Ashvok reveal earlier, right? And they have to kind of work with him for a little bit of time.
Yeah. I think it should have just been Vok. Vok's brain in Ash's body, that kind of thing. Like, I think he needs to...
To be more defined, clearly.
Yeah, I think having him be more Klingon and then having him learn the upside of the Federation.
Yeah, I was thinking the opposite, actually. His role would actually... I don't disagree, but I think that the Vok Ash role should have been explaining the Klingon position in a more humanistic way.
Yeah. Yep.
You know what I mean? Like explaining why the Klingons feel this way, to add a little bit of nuance to their relationship and make the Federation, you know, everyone learns a lesson at the end, kind of. Oh, this is how we have to deal with the Klingons. Similar to the Vulcan hello is how they initially thought that's how you deal with the Klingons. But Ash Vok reveals, you know, the sort of the Klingon way of thinking about things, which the Federation learns to at least deal with on a better level than they had been.
And even if you don't reveal to the characters earlier, I think it would have been beneficial to reveal to the audience earlier.
Yes. Yeah,
because
100%.
I think that instantly makes him a more interesting character. If you know the conflict that's going on as he's taking certain actions where, like, you know, he might save people that he wouldn't normally save because he's trying to masquerade as Tyler.
Yes, yeah.
But then does he get to the point where he's doing this because he thinks it's the right thing to do and not just a masquerade, you know, that kind of thing?
Yep. Well.
But did I mention I have a whole series of fan fiction alternate reality books I'm writing about Star Trek Discovery?
Yep. The mirror universe
called,
of the
It's called
show.
If I Did It by Clay McCormick.
Too soon. But I think that the... I don't disagree. I think that's a good way to go out, sort of. It's to say that the show is disappointing for how it didn't get any of this from the get-go. Like, it just missed all of that kind of stuff. Not that they had to do it this way, but the show is utterly bereft of any sort of introspection about what it wants to talk about or what it thinks that these setting up the pins this way, how this is going to all pay off in the end.
Yeah, and I've said this a couple times, but I totally understand that this is not an easy thing to do. Making a television show is not an easy thing to do. Making a television show that's a reboot of such a beloved property is not an easy thing to do. Trying to do that within the realm of the 50th anniversary is not an easy thing to do. And it's definitely not an easy thing to do when your showrunner leaves and you have to kind of reassess what you're doing, but you still have to hit the date you're coming to. Obviously, I understand that it's not easy.
Yep.
And I would like to say that I do give them a lot of credit for what they did do. I think there's a lot of good stuff in here, and I think I am hopeful for the next season. I hope that this is just another show in the long tradition of shitty first seasons of Star Trek.
Yes, right.
Because I think there's a lot there that they can play with. They've got some good characters. So, you know, Saru is great, as we were saying.
Yeah.
I don't know where Burnham really goes
We get a mystery new captain. Is the rotating captain chair going to be a thing of this show?
I kind of wish they had just given it to Saru.
Yeah.
Because I felt like that was... I mean, he had the most natural character arc in the show.
Yep.
And
he's the least Star Trek captain-y, I think, that we've ever had, really.
Yeah,
he's not,
but he is very much a Star Trek character.
Yes, he's very much a Star Trek character.
I think I'm sure Tyler's going to come back from his semester abroad on Kronos.
Yep.
And have a new way of looking at stuff, so maybe he could be a more interesting character going forward. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, I think there's stuff there. It'll be interesting to see what they do. Because everything in the show was so specifically geared towards this singular story that they were telling.
Yeah.
That it's going to be interesting to see how they pivot it and do whatever's next.
Yes. My hopes would be more of the, as I've said before, more of the Mad Men approach next season. Take episode. And you know how I was talking about the pacing of shows? Mad Men is a good example of, like Breaking Bad, how you get around that, where Mad Men had a start and an end point for their seasons, but the storytelling is such a way that if your pace starts to get out of control, you can slow it down by having a standalone episode in that universe.
Right.
That makes
right.
sense. And that allows you have a greater way to control things in that manner. And I think this Star Trek show would benefit greatly from that kind of storytelling exercise. When you think about it, the magic to make the sanest man go mad is really the only standalone episode this series had. So
is that the
time travel?
Yeah. One. Yes. Yeah.
And I think that was my most enjoyable episode of the season because it gave you time for Burnham and Tyler to actually develop a relationship, right? Mm-hmm. It gave you a cool little sci-fi concept and it wrapped everything up in the hour. And you're like, okay, that was fun. Why not do more of that? That would be my hope for season two.
Yeah, I would agree.
All right. Well, I think that we're done talking about Star Trek Discovery. We'll be back with a sort of debate video because Trexpertise has a generally higher regard for the season than I did. You guys can check out his reviews on YouTube. I'll put a link to it. And then we're just back to DS9 for the foreseeable future because I think that this show is not coming back until 2019 at some point. So we got a little bit of ways to go. Let us know your thoughts. Let us know what you thought about Discovery as a whole. I think, I don't know. I'm optimistic, I suppose. I'm a little bit worried about how this, I didn't like this season so much that hopefully it doesn't taint my opinion of the rest of the series. Maybe some time off will probably fix that in between seasons. But I don't really know. Do you have any final thoughts, Clay, before we sign off?
No.
Yeah, I think we've pretty much talked about it. I'm looking forward to the discussion video with Trexpertise because I think that'll be more of a season-long thing or a series-long ideas that we can talk about in that one and go places from there. So, guys, thank you very much for listening. Thank you for supporting the show. Thank you for watching Discovery with us. You can check out all the social media links in the podcast blurb or the video description. You can go to patreon.com/thepenskyfile to support the show over there. A couple dollars a month, you get extra stuff. If you don't want to support the show that way financially, it'd be much appreciated if you went to iTunes and gave us a rating and left a little one-sentence blurb or whatever. It's much appreciated. And if you don't want to support the show on Patreon, it's the next best thing you can do. Outside of that, the kids are screaming in the background. You'll probably hear them. We have mouths to feed over here. And then I think that's pretty much it. And patrons at the captain level of support, Vincent Adultman, Stephen Cobb, Holly McLaughlin, Carrier Mobility, Doug Valcamp, Michael Pond, Bradley Killens, Rune Vendler, Jay Stanley, Mike Burnett, Matthew Ross, Magpie Nest Productions, Ben Douglas, Kyle Barrett, Joint Mango, and Tarek Latif. Guys, thank you very much for supporting the show. It means a lot to us. And that's about it. Clay, it's time for the non sequitur outro. Did you have anything, any thoughts recently that you want to share or express?
I would like to thank anybody who's bought a copy of Redline. I've gotten some tweets from some people that said that they were, you know, had purchased it and stuff like that. So I hope you guys enjoy it. And if you haven't bought one and you feel like buying one, you can find them at comic book stores. I didn't have what's non sequitur ready, so I just opted for a shameless plug. So.
No, that's fine. That's fine. It'll be the plugs will be winding down, I think. My thing will just be I guess everyone should just know about the fear of living in a household that has a gastrointestinal bug going around. It's just I tweeted about how it was a more stressful moment these past couple of days than anything that happened in Star Trek Discovery, because it's as you're tending to someone who is just very, very ill, and you are just sitting in the background going with your stomach gurgling, going, I hope this is not happening to me. This is not the time that I need. I need to watch Star Trek Discovery.
And she starts speaking Klingon and kills the doctor.
Dr. Culber's coming back, apparently.
What?
Well, I think we'll take it from there. Guys, thank you very much for listening. Check out Real Ripe and Real Rotten. Check out all the other Star Trek shows. We'll be back with more Discovery. But in the meantime, we'll be back with more DS9. Thank you very much. See you next time.